advisor interest in self-funding is through the roof, but there's always more to learn. What don't you know that you don't know? We'll find out on this episode of Shift Shapers.
Change either paralyzes or energizes. The choice is yours. You're listening to the Shift Shapers podcast. You're about to learn firsthand from businesses and entrepreneurs who have successfully shaped the shifts in their industries. Get ready to become the change that you want to see. Here's your host and chief transformation strategist, David Saltzman.
This episode of the Shift Shapers podcast is brought to you by Captivated Health, a captive insurance arrangement that helps small and mid-market companies escape the fully insured marketplace and delivers stability, control, and savings without watering down employees' benefits or increasing their premium share. If you have clients in the educational institution or the engineering vertical, go to our website at CaptivatedHealth.com or click on the company logo on the Shift Shapers website.
On this episode of Shift Shapers, we're speaking with Jonathan Sacco. Jonathan is Senior VP of Sales and Business Development for East Coast Underwriters, a stop-loss managing general underwriter. And we'll talk a little bit about what that is later on. There's been a huge interest, for all the reasons that you all know, in partial self-funding. And the problem is that the education needed hasn't really caught up with all of that interest. So we thought Jonathan's a great educator and does an awful lot of this. And we thought it'd be a great time to kind of level set, help some folks who are newbies and maybe not so newbies learn some of the nuances of what they need to do in order to get a quote and what the components of a quote are. And then we'll talk a little bit about how different players position themselves in the marketplace so you understand what those differences are. And with that, welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, David. Really appreciate you having me. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. It's our pleasure to have you here on the program. Now, as I said in the open, there's been a tremendous amount of interest. And I know you field calls all day long from folks who are more comfortable and who've probably worked a lot more in the fully insured marketplace, and they're looking to either dip their toe in or get a quote. What is that conversation like? What do they need to know, and how do they go about getting a quote, and what are the pitfalls?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's a great place to start, right? So just the 101s of the good old request for proposal process when it comes to self-funding and medical stop loss. There's really a couple of ways you can go about obtaining quotes from stop loss. Sort of the old method, the tried and true, was that the broker or consultant would collect all the information from the employer group and send that to the third party administrator. The third party administrator would take that information, pretty it up with a nice bow, and send it out to their preferred stop loss markets. That is still a process today. With where the market has kind of gravitated in the last, oh boy, probably 7 to 8 years, there's been an increasingly large amount of interest for the brokers and consultants themselves to actually market the stop loss. So the method of going about obtaining through the third-party administrator is still great. Many times the TPA has a relatively robust staffing. All they handle is stop loss all day long. They handle obtaining quotes. They handle dealing with the carriers, renewals, and paying claims and all that fun stuff. So when you remove that aspect of it, putting it into the broker or consultant's hands, a lot of times there's a little bit of a gap in education. And it's an honest mistake, right? They could be new to it. They may say, well, you know, I have been approached by other markets, other stop loss markets, and I like the idea of controlling that aspect of it for a variety of reasons. Now, obtaining a stop loss quote is actually pretty simple, but typically there's some things that are missing. So the first thing they need to look at, right, is where is your group right now? If they're on the smaller side, chances are they're going to be fully insured. Perhaps they're with some type of level funded product through one of the major carriers. But nonetheless, the general information that they would need to request is pretty much the same. And that's, you know, the first thing is just a good old fashioned census, right? So date of birth, gender, type of coverage, zip codes, where the employees are located. We do run into a good bit of instances where the type of coverage is not listed on the census. And I would imagine that a lot of my counterparts, some of our friendly competitors, run into the same thing. So the census will have everything except for whether they are on the plan as an individual or whether they're on the plan as a family or an employee spouse. The other big thing that we find that's missing is the plan design that they're on currently as well. more oftentimes than not, most employers are offering two, maybe even three plans through their current insurance arrangement. And then maybe their intention to keep those two or three plans pretty identical once they move over into a self-funded environment. So it's imperative, really, that we know who is listed on which type of plan. That does directly impact the rates and attachment factors that are provided. Beyond that, and that's a really big piece of the puzzle, by the way, is just a simple census. I would say that there's probably at least a handful of times that our intake folks, our junior underwriting team, have to go back to producers during the course of 1 week alone where some of those key items might be missing from the census. And you know, you get into a situation where you're delaying the quote and this and that. So the more airtight that census can be out of the outset is obviously best. Just some other general information, company name, SIC code. You know, these things sound simple, but sometimes we'll just get an email. Hey, here's the census and the summary plan description for the prior year. You know, where's my quote? You know, so company name, where they're located, their address, if they have multiple locations. Do you want commissions remitted through stop loss? What's the effective date? We would also like to see some type of basic cover sheet. And that's another thing that's generally lacking with most consultants that are just dipping their toe into actually submitting an RFP is a cover sheet, you know, PPO network, plan design. Do you have the renewal rates yet? That sort of thing.
So let's talk a little bit about the place where when I was running a TPA many years ago, we ended up having the most conversations with folks, especially, again, those folks coming from a fully insured environment. Let's talk about experience and when you can get that and what you do when you can't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point and a great question. It really depends on your size and where you're located if you're an employer. So you kind of have the two greater extremes, right? You've got the great state of Texas that has a wonderful transparency law called House Bill or HB 2015. That requires that groups of all sizes that are fully insured have access to some type of claims reporting. And I believe they have access to it two times per year. It's a wonderful thing because we could look at a 25 life group. And I know that there is credible claims experience to underwrite off of, which is a beautiful thing. On the greater of that extreme is a state like California, right, where the carriers aren't mandated to release really anything to groups that are less than 200 or 250 employees. So most states generally fall somewhere in the middle. I would say a really good rule of thumb is if you're not very aware, maybe you're just kind of getting into quoting stop loss or maybe you're new to the consulting world. If your group has less than 100 employees in most states, there's not going to be much claims information. So there's a few ways you can go about underwriting. The tried and true method is if you don't have access to claims information, your employer that you're representing is 50 or 60 or 70 employees. You know, talking to them about going through the process of individual underwriting via health questionnaires. I'm sure some of the listeners are cringing a little bit and wincing perhaps. They feel that this process can be quite laborious when, you know, the reality is that most of the time it's not. There are a variety of ways you can collect this information. There's some great websites out there like FormFire and Easy Apps, and I'm actually not plugging them. We've worked with these two services pretty regularly for the past 5 or 6 years, but they have a lot of the carriers' forms listed on there. So the employees fill out the form, takes, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes. They send it in and they're done. A lot of stop loss carriers, direct writers, they may also have their own proprietary form. A lot of managing general underwriters, companies like ourselves, have their own proprietary form as well, usually available through some type of online service. So that's probably the best way to go about underwriting a group when you lack that claims information that we also desperately want. I would say that that's probably the best gatekeeper to trying to determine whether or not a group is going to be a viable candidate for self-insurance. Probably one of the biggest misconceptions I see in the market now is that every employer that has at least, you know, 15 or 20 employees on their employer-sponsored plan can and should have some type of level-funded or partially self-funded plan. That's just quite simply not the case. Some groups are a year, 2 years out from being able to gravitate into that model. And the individual questionnaire route is probably the best method to determine whether or not these groups are going to be viable in a self-funded or partially self-funded environment.
Is financial suitability something that you do on your side of the equation when you're looking at an employer who's thinking about going partially self-funded, or is that something that is solely the realm of the advisor or the consultant?
I'd say that's mostly the realm of the advisor consultant. It could impact, though, how the employer chooses to fund. So the employer may understand that they want to self-fund. And let's just use two different examples of a group of similar size. Two employers, they both have, let's just say, 70 employees, but they've been underwritten and they understand that, hey, from a risk perspective, we think we're going to succeed in a partially self-funded or self-funded environment. So, okay, employer A they absolutely have no issues with wherewithal. They say, you know what? You know, we're doing extremely well. We've got a lot of money in reserves. We are not concerned at all about the weekly and monthly ebbs and flows in self-insurance. So, you know, we'll purchase monthly aggregate accommodation through the stop loss carrier, which provides a little bit of mid-month relief in the event that they have an overly hot month when it comes to claims. But by and large, they're not too worried about the ebbs and flows. And you could have the opposite side of the equation where their counterpart says, you know what, month to month, it can be a little tight. We're not worried about the overall maximum cost on an annual basis. But if we could find some type of level premium or level funded equivalent, we'd be a little bit more comfortable, just even if we had to fund, you know, $5,000 or $7,000 over what we're expecting on a month to month basis, might be a little tight. So that conversation can come into play from an administrator and a stop loss standpoint. And at that point, maybe we have a conversation about, okay, should the group perhaps level fund or should they not, depending on which side of the coin they fall on in the two examples that I provided.
And now a word from our sponsor. Captivated Health is a single source solution for your clients and prospects in the education and engineering verticals. The founders of Captivated Health have 35 years experience working with healthcare and benefit clients. And over that time, they've developed a keen understanding of the unique problems mid-market clients experience. Frustrated by a lack of control, the unpredictability of ever-increasing healthcare costs, and the pressures and regulations of the Affordable Care Act, these groups have been adrift in the fully insured commercial marketplace. Until now. Captivated Health has built a program that solves those problems and does so with virtually no disruption to employees while saving clients millions of dollars. We wanted you to be among the first to know that Captivated Health is building a national distribution partner network so you can bring this cutting-edge solution to your education and engineering clients that you advise. To learn more about Captivated Health's solution, go to our website at www.captivatedhealth.com or click on our logo on the Shift Shapers website. So when you get a new advisor who's new to this, do you go through, we don't have time today to do all of this, but do you go through explaining and helping them understand the difference between spec and ag and things they might not have heard of before, like attachment point and terms and terminal funding and all of those kinds of things?
Oh, absolutely. And that's just part of the, you know, information processing request that we would gather with any new producer, sort of what their level of education is, how much do they understand about stop loss. So if we need to get into the weeds and go back to the basics and do, you know, let's just say stop loss 101, that's perfectly fine. So absolutely, we will provide those services. And most other carriers that are doing a lot of direct writing with brokers will do the same thing. So if they need the education, yeah, it's absolutely there for them. And there's a variety of resources out there to gather that information as well. And we're more than happy to steer them in the right direction.
So let's spend a little bit of time kind of clarifying some stuff, because again, if you're a producer and you're used to working in a general agent type of scenario, that's a little bit different than when folks hear managing, general underwriter, and some other terms, they get confused. So let's start with the traditional, what everybody knows a general agent does, and then talk about the different forms on your side of the house.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great topic, David. So a general agent is an organization that they're basically, you know, what some would call a broker's broker. So a lot of brokerage agencies and brokerage houses, they have a lot more on their plates than just employee medical benefits, right? So on occasion, they will outsource marketing to direct insurance carriers, fully insured carriers, stop loss, TPA services to a general agent. And they have tons and tons of relationships with direct insurance writers, stop loss carriers, managing general underwriters, TPAs, you name it. And they'll send the RFP out to market on behalf of the broker, collect the best quotes, do the negotiating, and come back and say, hey, Mrs. Broker, here's the best quote that we found. Based on our expertise, we think this is the best option for your client, yada, yada, yada. So that's mostly what a general agent does. When we talk about managing general underwriters or MGUs, a lot of times we will run into consultants and advisors that haven't worked with an MGU in the past. They may know the acronym or know the term. They may have, you know, seen it floating around in the marketplace somewhere, but they tend to think of that as the same as a GA or a general agent. They couldn't be more different. A managing general underwriter is performing all of the functionality for a fronting paper for medical stop loss. So what I mean by that is they perform intake of the RFP. They actually employ their own underwriters and staff. So they underwrite the group, they issue the quote, they actually will manage the policy once that's set in stone, payment of claims, et cetera. So all that's done by the MGU. So you would really think of the managing general underwriters that are out there really kind of in the same light that you would the direct writers in the stop loss market. I think a lot of people tend to think of MGU sort of existing somewhere out in the ether. They're not really like, they're kind of like a stop loss carrier, but not really. When in fact, a lot of the functionality that's performed is very, very similar. Many of us just aren't insurance companies by design. So that's the big difference between, I would say, general agents and MGUs and direct writers.
Would you suggest that an advisor who's not really familiar with doing partially self-funded plans head to a TPA first and let the TPA handle all of this, or should they come directly to an MGU first?
I think it depends on their level of knowledge going in. I don't think it hurts to start with the TPA. I mean, if they're very, very much well versed in the self-insured space, but maybe they've just gotten into the brokerage and consulting side, it might not hurt to start with the TPA. But as I mentioned earlier, many of us are more than willing to sit down and provide whatever education necessary to make sure that they're acclimated with stop loss and understanding everything before going in. But it doesn't hurt to talk to the TPA first. And the reason for that is because the TPAs, for the most part, have a lot of deeply rooted stop loss relationships. You know that you're not going to be getting into a situation where maybe you're trying to pair a carrier or MGU with a TPA that, you know, maybe they've never worked together, or maybe they haven't had an account together in the past 8 years. So anything you can do to sort of avoid those gaps, I would say, is good. So if you do want to market stop loss on your own, I think the best question, one of the best questions you can ask either the carrier or MGU that you're thinking about working with, or, you know, if you're thinking about working with two or three or four, ask them all the same question. You know, who are some of your preferred third-party administrator relationships? Can you talk to me about those relationships? Who are they? How long have you been working with them, et cetera? I generally try to advise the consultants that I work with, especially the newer ones, who our preferred TPAs are. That way we can be kind of part of that consultative process. And I know going in that, hey, we're going to be working with somebody that we have a great relationship with. We're very much privy to their processes and procedures when it comes to stop loss, payment of claims, everything under the sun, right? So there's that comfort level there. There's an existing working relationship. So I don't think it hurts to go directly to stop loss. I also don't think it hurts to go to the TPA first and say, hey, you know, let me get some information, let me get some education, and then maybe they'll get a little bit more comfortable marketing directly to stop loss. But anytime you can pair a TPA and a stop loss market together that have an existing relationship, I think that's going to be the best fit for all parties involved.
Well, because I mean, I guess you'd agree with this, that at the end of the day, it's got to look like a team effort, not like a box of disparate parts.
Absolutely. Because then you end up with, you know, the island of misfit toys, and God forbid you have a claims issue. You don't want to run into a situation where the administrator and the carrier or MGU haven't worked together in 10 years and you have a claim dispute on your hand. And, you know, maybe there was a misunderstanding when the plan was written, the carrier misunderstood a very important piece of the plan. And, you know, to be fair, most MGUs and most direct writers, the policies are generally reinsuring the plan, but you know, there are crazy things that can happen if you're pairing pieces together that don't fit or haven't worked together in some time. So it's definitely imperative that you ask who they've worked with, who they're comfortable with, and that sort of thing, because you'll avoid many a headache down the road.
Well, and you know, consultants, brokers, advisors, call them what you will, are always seeking, first of all, to make sure that clients are happy. And if you have this, as you called it, island of misfit toys, these pieces that are kind of crammed together with crazy glue and bubblegum, it's not going to make for a really great client experience. And no matter how well they do on the plan, they're going to come back to you and go, this is like way too complicated to manage and way too complicated to deal with.
Absolutely.
Move me back into the fully insured universe. And that's really a shame, especially when you get a plan that is working well.
Absolutely.
We've got about a minute left. Where do you see the future of this? I mean, I know you guys are seeing an awful lot of uptick in interest. Where do you see this going in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really a continuation of a lot of the things that are bubbling up now. I think captive insurance is going to continue to make its name known in the self-funded arena, and as it should. Captives are a great way to manage risk, especially for small and medium-sized employers. I think we're going to continually gravitate towards these new and innovative cost containment strategies that are bubbling up as well, which are great. So, you know, we talked a lot about portability today and you know, pairing TPAs together with different stop loss carriers. The same can be said for cost containment services that are out there. So, you know, make sure you're vetting those out. Make sure that your carrier and your TPA and your cost containment services can all work well together as well. So just a fleeting point on that. But I really think that captive insurance and the emergence of more new and innovative cost containment strategies to help employers save money, it's going to be a lot more of that, which is a great thing. I think it's one of the best times to be in self-funding is right now. So very excited for the future.
I would agree with that. It's a terrific time for self-funding, and it's interesting how it's kind of old concepts, but shaking up a lot of new markets. With that, Jonathan Sacco, Senior Vice President of Sales and Business Development for East Coast Underwriters. Jonathan, thank you for sharing your expertise. We hope you'll come back. There's a lot more to talk about on the subject.
Hey, I'd love to be on again, David. Thank you so much. Have a great day and happy holidays out there.
The Shift Shapers podcast is a production of Strategic Vision Publishing and David Saltzman. This podcast may not be reproduced in any form, in whole or in part, without the express written permission of the producers. All rights reserved.